Welcome to the SkillStack Podcast, a podcast with one aim in mind, to bring you the best ideas, tactics, and information to help you grow your confidence, your value, and your bank balance with every epic. Here is your host, author, public speaker, and world record holder, Ray McLennan.
Hi, and welcome to the SkillStack Podcast. My name is Ray McLennan. I'm the creator of SkillStack.com and your host, and I'm here in the SkillStack studio with another episode to help show and grow your skills, which will help you raise your value to yourself, your business, and your family. Now, we're entering a brave new world, and having a variety of the right type of skills is going to be vital, whether you're employed, self-employed, or just starting out. So this episode is number 41, and it's entitled, Had a Bad Lockdown? Well, here's how to end it well. Now, if you're driving, listening to this, or aren't able to take notes, don't worry, you'll be able to get the important information in the checklist in the show notes. So, without any further delay, here we go. Now, I've had a lot of one-to-one conversations on Zoom with probably over 100 or so people in the last few weeks. And a number of times, the word slump has come up. What is a slump, and why do we need to get through it? Well, I suppose a slump, it's a general malaise, a feeling of being, you know, down in the dumps, unable to shake off a feeling of lethargy, lack of energy. Valley time, it can sometimes be called. The valley is the look of the graph if you were tracking, say, your energy or a fall in sales calls made or a drop in effort. You might normally be trundling along at an energy level of 7 out of 10, but now it might be 2 or 3 on the same scale. And yet you know that sooner or later you'll get back up to 7 or even higher. So that gap is called valley time or a slump. You might make, I don't know, 10 calls a day, but now you're not making any. You might send 20 emails, now it's 3 or 4, and those are the ones that you want to send. The ones you don't want to send, or the people you don't want to contact, those unsent emails, unmade calls, are piling up in your head, and they're adding to the burden, they're adding to the slump. You're failing to move forward, you're static, you're not in motion. Now, when I hear the word motion, it reminds me of something that I suppose we all ought to be reminded about, the rules of motion. Sir Isaac Newton, who was the great mathematician and physicist, who was born, I think he was born about 12 miles away from where I'm recording this. He was born in a place called Woolsthorpe or Colsterworth, a few miles south of the town of Grantham in Lincolnshire, which if you're listening in America is in Middle England. And he was famous for his three laws. So Newton's three laws of motion. So number one, every object is in a state of uniform motion, will remain in that state of motion unless an external force acts on it. Number two is force equals mass times acceleration. And then number three is for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Now, another way to describe the first law is if an object is at rest, it remains at rest unless something acts upon it. Now, another quote popped into my head, and if you want something done, that is, give it to a busy person. In other words, when you're in a slump or you're at rest, you need some external force or action to get you going. Busy people don't need this force because they're already in motion. They're already doing something. But here's the thing. This force that we are talking about here is not external. It's internal. It's not external motivation. It's purely internal motivation. And that's the easiest to create, the easiest to conjure, the easiest to get going. Now, here's an example. And an example, it's a man coming home from a long commute from a job that he dislikes or even hates. He gets home, slumps, note that word, into a chair, picks up the remote, tells his wife, his partner, kids, leave him alone. Had a long day. He's got no energy left. Just wants to zone out in front of the TV. And he zaps at it, looking for nothing in particular. Then his mobile phone rings. It's a sunny evening. There's been a cancellation at the golf club and his friend says he's bagged the slot. If they can just get there in 20 minutes, they can tee off and have a cold beer in the clubhouse after 18 holes. Suddenly, boom, he's up, out of the chair, running upstairs into his room to get changed, telling his partners and his kids he'll see them later, gets changed in record time, runs downstairs and into the car to head off and meet his buddy. Now, it also works the other way around. You know, women get a call from their friends or from kids who get a call from their friends. I mean, I've seen it in my son and daughter when a friend calls and, you know, wants to meet them. Please, Dad, can we go? Please, please. All of a sudden they were tired and then suddenly they get this burst of energy from who knows where. This is entirely internal motivation. It didn't need pills or drugs or food or an energy drink. It came entirely from changing a thought. Now, but this slump that we are in now has been brought about by external events, demotivation by an external international event. We are internally demotivated by external events out with our control. Or are we? Is it out with our control? In this podcast and other podcast episodes, I not only want to get you out of the slump you're in, and statistically, if you're listening to this, you probably are in one, but I also want you to have good memories of it when you do finally come out. And what do I mean by that? Well, in a couple of years' time, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years' time, you're going to be either asked about what you did in this lockdown, because it is an event that's going to be remembered for a long, long time. So what did you do? What did you do? Well, you'll probably most likely reminisce and you'll recall what you actually did in the lockdown. And your memories of the time are going to be tempered and clouded by reality. Or will they? Now, memory is a funny thing. It can play tricks on us. And what I remember about something, an event, a conversation, a time and a place, will not be what you remember about the same something, the same event, the same time, the same conversation or place if you were there. Anyone's got an ex-partner, ex-wife, husband will know exactly what I'm talking about. But if your memory can play tricks on you, could you play tricks on it? Is there a way to hack your memory? And the answer is yes. Your future memory of lockdown could be completely different to your memory right now. And it's all to do with something that an old Italian restaurant owner taught me many years ago. There is, of course, formal psychology involved in all of this. But I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. Let's get to the good stuff. The advice of an old Italian restaurateur. Now, I've owned restaurants. I got involved in the restaurant business after I dabbled in the wine and beer importing business. I'd imported beer and wine and sold it to restaurants, and one restaurant owner in particular owed me a lot of money for the wine I'd delivered to him, and he was unable to pay cash. He did, however, offer me the keys to a restaurant, and one thing led to another, and I had more than one, and I was now firmly in the restaurant business. But that led me to talk about it in the early days with an old Italian restaurant owner. Now, the city that I lived in then, like yours, has a lot of Italian restaurants. And my father, who never owned restaurants but did do a lot of business with Italians, would agree. The old Italian restaurant owner said to me, there are a few, I'm not going to put on the accent, but you get it. There are a few golden rules to running a restaurant. It could be argued that the same rules apply to any business, and I assure you they'll probably answer the question about coming out of a slump and hacking your memory of lockdown to be a nice one. So keep listening. He said to me, there are two very important times in the restaurant. How he said it was, there are two very important times in the restaurant business. Number one is when people arrive at your door. They arrive at the door of the restaurant. They must be immediately be welcomed. The more enthusiastic or over the top the welcome, the better. But the people, the customers arriving, must be acknowledged. Now, I'm sure if you cast your memory back to the last time you visited an Italian restaurant, not a group or a chain, not Jamie's Italian Meals, Frankie and Benny or Bella Italia or any of the other franchise factories. I mean a traditional Italian, mom and pop as the Americans would call it, or the one or two restaurants in your city that are Italian owned and operated. You know the one. No matter when you go there, the same staff always seem to be around. Now, you know how people say, well, first impressions count. Yes, they do to a certain extent. But bear with me, because there's something more important coming up. But anyway, picture the scene. You arrive, the place is reasonably busy, you stand in the doorway, you hear the sound of the other diners, there might be the faint hint of music, Italian of course. There's a general hubbub of activity, shouts from the kitchen as food is ready to be served. The heat, the smells of the room hit you. It's bright, it's nearly always red and green, and someone has probably done a mural of the hometown in Italy on the back wall. There might be fake ivy. You're standing there at the door, waiting. Not for long, though, because Tony, or Luigi, or Giuliano sees you and immediately comes over. He's probably never even seen you before, but because you're at the front and you have people behind you, he welcomes you like an old friend. Hello, my friend. How are you? How many for a dinner tonight? Table for four. See, no problem, my friend. Come this way. And he leads you to the table. Red and white checked gingham tablecloth, serviettes alternating in red and green. Wine bottle, Italian, of course, with a candle in. The candle might be red, green or white. And there's cutlery laid out. Now he sits you down, taking care to fuss a little bit longer over the ladies. Menus are brought quickly. Bread, breadsticks, maybe even a small bowl of olives is placed down. Someone else comes and asks you for a drink order and drops a jug of water, some glasses at the same time. Now, that's a first impression. It's a simple one. It's not, isn't it? It is. It's easy, isn't it? You're where you want to be. You're at a table with drinks. You've got menus. You've got something to nibble on, something to look at. You're holding something. You're chatting with friends. You're drinking. And they are probably congratulating you on your choice of venue. You feel pretty good. Everyone feels good. It's easy. Then why, if it's so easy, do other restaurants or other businesses not do it? They should. It is easy, but they don't. Now, the simplicity of it is that no matter how busy the restaurant is, you now have something to keep you busy. You've got menus, you've got water, possibly wine, olives, bread, sticks, olives, bread. It could be 30 minutes or an hour before they take your order. It won't, but it could be. But you and your guests could quite happily sit there while the hustle and bustle of the restaurant swirls around you. And that's the first impression, number one, when people arrive. You'll know it as creating a good first impression. And you have heard it said that first impressions count. Well, they do, but so do last impressions. Now, the second time, my old Italian mentor said, second time is more important. What about the meal, said I? What about the food? Well, what about it? He said, hey, you can't really compete on the food unless you hire a Michelin-starred chef. And if you do, your business then depends on his moods, and chefs are moody. You don't want to rely on the chef. You need to create good food, better than people can do themselves at home or with takeaways. And that's not that hard, because you've got something that they do not have at home. You've got atmosphere. Have you ever had a bottle of wine abroad and then the same wine at home? It's never the same, is it? The atmosphere is what makes it. The ambiance, the sounds, the smells, the heat, the light, the people. Very hard to replicate. So you serve good food and everything else makes it better. Not Michelin-starred better, but better nonetheless. Now you need to concentrate on last impressions. What's all this got to do with getting out of a slump and COVID and lockdown, I hear you ask? I'll get to that. You need to concentrate on last impressions. Now, in the restaurant business, that happens the moment they ask for the bill. When they ask for the bill, get the bill to them as quickly as possible. Usually, this will be accompanied by a couple of mints on a little saucer, but everyone does mints. You need to go above and beyond, and Italians know this. Now, you can do this before the bill, at the same time as the bill, or in between asking for the bill and getting the bill, but not after the bill has been served. And what do all non-franchise Italian restaurants offer? Can you remember? Yes, limoncello. Limoncello or amaro, a digestif, a liqueur, a little something. Now, you've probably seen it on the menu. It might even be $5.95 a shot. He offers you four shots. Or 24 quid's worth of alcohol for free. Now, subliminally, you're thinking, what a guy. Now, not only are you not even going to question the bill, you'll just pay. You might even also leave a generous tip. But that's not the reason for the limoncello. Okay, it might be if it's a tourist restaurant. I mean, I remember visiting a restaurant in Rome. It's not always limoncello. I remember visiting a restaurant in Rome just along from the Trevi Fountain. It had vines outside and a queue of people. It was a warm night and there were two or three floors what looked like of a busy restaurant. I was with my Scottish-Italian girlfriend at the time, now my wife. We got in. Everything I've spoken about happened. The meal was, well, actually, I can't remember, was okay, adequate. We were suitably fed. The waiter discovered that my girlfriend was Italian. They chatted in Italian. I caught every seventh word. I was pretty sure she wasn't about to dump me for the waiter, as the conversation was all about Italy and food in Scotland, at least I think it was. And at the end, though, it wasn't limoncello that he brought. It was the good stuff. It was grappa. Now, I'm not sure if you've ever heard of grappa or had grappa. I had never had it before, nor, dear listeners, have I had it since. I'm not sure how many he gave us, but I ended up writing and drawing the events of the night on the paper placemat. You know, the type that's got it. It's got the logo of the restaurant in it. And even after a few years, it still looked good, if I say so myself. But what I remember most was that when I went to get up and go to the toilet, my legs didn't work. It was the most bizarre thing. I was talking normally, or so I thought. My upper body was fine. My arms worked. I could see clearly. But from the waist down, I was almost paralysed. It was indeed the most bizarre thing. But at the end of a very long day, my memory of the night is actually one of joy. It was a shared moment of a simple meal in a special place with a special person, and one I will never forget. And that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, lads and lasses, is the power of a last impression. So how can this work for you? How can your memories of the lockdown be hacked by the advice of an old Italian restaurateur? Well, it's quite simple. As we go into this week, which may be the last week of official lockdown, you need to up your game just for the last few days. Now, you may have been slobbing around, you may have gained weight, you may have not been doing what you wanted to do, you may have had high hopes of doing lots of online classes, writing that book, reading that pile of books, doing those drawings, painting that room, clearing that cupboard or garage. Well, to formally hack your memory of lockdown, you need to do all those things now. To get out of your mental slump, you need to invoke Sir Isaac Newton's first law. Every object in a state of uniform motion will remain in that state of motion unless an external force acts on it. Well, I am your external force. I am the prodding, the gentle prodding. So if you've not done as well as you thought during this lockdown time, then the good news is you do have that chance to redeem yourself. So start today. Make that list. Order that journal. Start some push-ups. Go for a walk. Do whatever you need to do, but do something. Start. Get it going. Your last memories of lockdown will then be hacked, and the previous few months of you doing nothing and slobbing around will be consigned to history. Your memory of it will be a good one. That's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. And if you like this podcast, please leave a review and share with anyone who might benefit from listening. Reviews are good for getting this out to more and more people, and the listenership will rise. Now, you can find more information in the show notes that accompany all the episodes. If you've got any questions or want to ask me about anything in this podcast, you can join the Skill Stack on Facebook or in Twitter at the Skill Stack, or you can email us directly, info@theskillstack.com. And if you want to discover the power of accelerated personal growth, you can sign up to the Mindset Training Strategy modules at theskillstack.com. Once again, thank you for listening, and I hope to talk to you again in the next episode. And remember, the greatest investment you'll ever make is investing in yourself. I've been Ray McLennan. This has been the Skill Stack podcast. Thank you once again for listening, and goodbye.